Lecture 11, The Origins of Democracy.
Welcome back to this, our 11th lecture in a series on ancient Greek civilization. And today we're going to be looking more closely at the origins of democracy. In the last two lectures, we've dealt with two of the reformers and statesmen of the 6th century who had an enormous impact on the development of democracy in ancient Athens. We first looked at Solon, whose archonship in 594 BC saw a series of reforms that had long-reaching effects on Athenian and Greek life. I pointed out that he had been elected as an economic reformer and that in the Syzactia, or the shaking off of debts, shaking off of burdens, he had instituted a series of economic reforms, and pointed out that he also had instituted constitutional reforms by creating four census classes by which the Athenian state would now be organized, which would give people access to various levels of participation in government. But we did notice that in the reforms of Solon, the short-term effect was not particularly beneficial because Athens remained mired in stasis, this rivalry and conflict between factions that we've seen occurring in Greek history. We saw then that the second great figure of the 6th century was Pisistratus. And though he was not a constitutional reformer, in fact, he was quite the opposite in that he was, in fact, a tyrant who had seized power illegally, we saw that nevertheless he had an immense impact on the development of Athens, primarily by helping to more clearly articulate a sense of Athenian identity, of Athenian commonality, if you will. We saw this through the reforms that he'd instituted economically that had led to a much greater degree of prosperity in Athens. We saw a cultural transformation of Athens so that what in the 560s had been a city-state afflicted by stasis and the conflict of various rival groups, by the end of the decade was now proclaiming itself and seeing itself as one of the most powerful Greek city-states, not only of the mainland but also of the entire Aegean basin. Now, if we turn then to the end of the tyranny and see what follows from here, we find something extremely interesting. Because in the century or so after tyranny collapsed at Athens, the Athenians, in their newly established democracy, tried to suggest to themselves that in fact the tyranny had been a terrible period and that most of them had opposed it all along. What we're going to find in the period after the end of the tyranny in Athens is that there is a great deal of imaginative reconstruction of what went on in the period before. Let me illustrate that with a concrete example that's worth knowing about. The popular tradition in Athens in the 5th century was that two Athenian aristocrats had slain the tyrant and had set Athens on the road towards democracy. In fact, this was recalled even in a drinking song that Athenian men would sing while they were drinking at their evening dinner parties. And in this song, one of the singers holds up his cup and says, "I toast Harmodius and Aristogiton, who slew the tyrants and made Athens a place of equal law." Isonomos, Athens a place of equal law. And yet, that memory is completely wrong. The tyranny did not collapse with the slaughter of Hipparchus in 514. It actually continued for another 4 years. Now, before we go on, I don't want to simply point out a misconception in the minds of the Athenians, but try to explain how that could come about and what use it served. And for that, I need to explain the story of Harmodius and Aristogiton a little bit more fully. This drinking song that I've referred to recalls the death of Hipparchus. And the circumstances of that death are as follows. In 514, Hipparchus, the younger son of the tyrant Pisistratus, by now dead, had fallen in love with a young Athenian aristocrat by the name of Aristogiton. He had made advances towards Aristogiton, but he was rebuffed. Aristogiton was already in a relationship with another older Athenian man named Harmodius.